Welcome to Logger, episode number 8, if I'm not mistaken. And tonight we are going to talk about a wonderful, finish up the multimedia topics with trolls. And Devin has a whole lot to offer. I don't see Jesse here tonight, so we'll just continue on without him.
He chickened out.
Yeah, he had to last week. He's like, whoa.
Maybe his ass is hurting.
Yeah. I don't know. Now, I know you didn't listen to it, Trolls, but they got into some Linux bashing towards the end of the episode.
I had to listen to that and then bug his ass about it, because you don't bash Linux in a Linux podcast.
You can only bash SUSE in a Linux podcast, right?
Well, I can bash Slackware for being a hell to install crap on. Try installing iFolder on that one, Dan.
Yeah, well, that's just a little on the tough side. Actually, I was hanging out with a friend of mine the other night from our local users group, and we got together. He had installed OpenExchange on a Slackware system.
And what is OpenExchange?
It is an open replacement for kind of like Microsoft's Exchange server.
Okay.
It provides groupware features. And if I'm not mistaken, SUSE had acquired OpenExchange, and I think they kind of like managed the project.
Yeah, well, they used to have a product called SUSE Linux OpenExchange Server.
Right, and they still do, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. I've never seen Novell advertise that. I've never seen it actually advertised since SUSE Linux 8.something, I guess.
Right,
that was a while ago.
Yeah, but the OpenExchange server, there's two versions. I guess there's a commercial and there's an open, like a community version. And what differentiates the two is a commercial version has better user management tools. And believe me, it'd probably be nice to have the better user management tools, particularly if you're in a larger environment. Now, his environment is like, I think, under 20 people, which is not a nightmare to maintain with the command line management tools, but... You know, when you get up in there in the larger businesses, you probably want the commercial management tools.
I need to look at it, just because I looked at Novell's products page the other day, and I didn't see that. I thought they dumped OpenExchange Server.
I'll have to look that up. But you know what? I'm sorry I'm a little late, guys, today, because I went out to lunch, and, in the tradition of the name of the show, I got myself a nice can of what's called Camo 24. It's some really great ghetto lager. That's 8.5% alcohol.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So,
hey, just imagine what this is going to be like in an hour.
Yeah, well, I have one for lunch, and I brought one home with me, and it's some lager. There we go.
Now it's not Daddy's got a gun, now it's Daddy's got a beer.
Yeah, Daddy's got a beer. You know what? I guess without further ado, man, let's finish up those multimedia players, because now I think you're going to get into the ones that that I use on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, before I get into those, I want to mention a few things. Last time I talked about GNOME players, and I just want to add a player to that category. I haven't tried it out personally, but there's a player built on Mono called Muine or something like that. Muine, how do you pronounce that? But that's something to check out too. It looks pretty nice on the screenshots I've seen, but I've not tried it myself. But that's just one I wanted to throw in there. And also, the Amarok project just released their 1.40 release, and that's really, I've been using that for a couple of days now, and it's really nice. Definitely go upgrade if you're using Amarok. Okay, we get into those.
You know what? Before you get into the last one, there was another thing that was brought up. Beep Media Player.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, the Beep itself has is gone, the original, but there's a newer version now.
Well, I don't know. It's a little confusing, but I think there's something called Beep Media Player X or something like that, and then that's kind of the official or maybe descendant, or I don't know.
I think
there's also one called Audacious.
I think the developer stopped maintaining Beep Media Player, and then someone else took it up, and then I guess someone else made Audacious or whatever it is.
But so there is a Beep Media Player too.
There's a Beat Media Player 2?
Right, because I have that.
Well, did they stop it too then, version 2? Or?
I think I just looked it up on Wikipedia, and there's a section called Forks, and it's there. And I'm reading right off the page right here. Along with the announcement of the 0971 release, the BMP development team has announced that BMP would not be actively developed anymore. Instead, the team would spend development effort on the next generation of BMP called BMPX.
Right.
A few days following the announcement, William Nenolot Hitchcock decided to fork classical BMP as Audacious Media Player.
Right.
So, there you go.
And that's what I'm running under Arch. Oh. And I'll make sure we make a note of the Beat Media Player X homepage. And I'll put that up in the show notes today.
Yeah, it's the same homepage as the regular one. And I was wondering why the original Beep wasn't in Portage, but I guess that's why.
Yeah. Well, if you're running GNOME, you should try out that Muine player I just mentioned. It's muine-player.org.
Have you tried it?
No, but it looks very neat because it shows covers and also very such a thing. It has a clean interface and stuff like that. It looks pretty nice. It's built on Mono, so it should fit right into the kind of the same feel as Banshee does. Stephen J. Will Nichols had an article on Banshee the other day on desktoplinux.com.
And it's M-U-N-I-E, right?
M-U-I-N-E.
Okay, because I'm not getting the right thing. Yeah. And I think you actually have to go to the wiki for that, because...
Yeah, it's a wiki.
The M-U-N-I-E, .GUIlinux.org page, is just a placeholder.
Well, that's muine-player.org.
Right. Well, wait, let me see. If we go to player.org, it takes me right to the wiki.
Yeah, it's a wiki. You see, there's the screenshot right there on the right, so... But it looks pretty nice. Need to try it out.
And it requires Mono.
Also, right. Yeah, one of the things I noticed about Mono is actually that the executable files get a .exe extension even on the Linux, and that scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that with some of the other Mono stuff I'm trying out. It's like it builds a .exe.
Yeah. Well, where the fuck did that come from? We need to get Miguel on the show and buzz his ass about that. Because you can't have .exe files on Linux.
I know, it's weird, because some of the times when you build a Mono application from source, and you look at it, and it is a .exe, you can't just, like, run that file.
Yeah. You need, Mono is kind of a virtual machine, isn't it?
Right. Well, I don't know if it's... Would you call it a virtual machine, or would you...
I don't know. I think... Yeah, I don't know.
Or a developmental environment.
I have no idea. It's a runtime environment.
Right. What was I playing with? D.Va.
Yeah, D.Va. That's an editor, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a video editor. And let's see where I can find that. Well, D.Va doesn't end up with a .exe file. But I'm trying to remember what application I installed... Or started to try and use that ended up with a .exe. It was a Mono based application.
Banshee, FSPA.
I don't know. Well, Banshee, a lot of those, like Banshee and a few other ones, I didn't have to compile from source. But there was a Mono based one. Let me see. Which Banshee? Noombin. Yeah, Banshee doesn't end up with the .exe. I can't remember which one it is.
I was using Banshee last night, and I could have sworn I saw a .exe this extension.
Mine doesn't have a .exe, but I installed it from the Arch repositories.
Okay, I'm using it on my Mac Mini on the Fedora Core 5.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And Mune, which I'm assuming that's the way it's pronounced, there is an Arch package for it, and it doesn't have a .exe, so I'm looking at it right now.
Looks interesting.
It looks pretty slim. I'm wondering what... see, if I tell it to play a song... Oh, is this one of those where I have to import my...
I don't think so. It shouldn't be. Because why duplicate Banshee? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and I pull it up, and I can play a song, but it's not letting me add anything that I can see.
Interesting.
And import. Oh, import folder. I gotta import a folder first.
You do?
Apparently. And after I import the folder, it doesn't seem like it likes. Here we go. It doesn't like. I don't see a lot of support for.
Well, it uses GStreamer as its backend.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of support for anything other than maybe AUG and MP3. So, because I tried to, I have a few songs that I purchased off of using Sharp. Is it Sharp Music?
Wait. Yeah, it is.
Sharp Music that I pulled down a few weeks ago that are all in MPEG-4 audio, and it will not pull those in. But
I think
MP3 files.
Code monkey, get up, those get work. Coffee.
Yeah, I actually it'll play job. Play my MP3 files. Code.
Well, I know why that's the case. I don't think there's an MPEG-4 plugin for GStreamer, or if there is, you don't have it installed.
That could be the case right there.
Yeah, because GStreamer there's patents on MPEG-4 and all that crap. So,
but there is an open version of MPEG-4.
Yeah, well, the patents. If you patent, you can't create an open source version of MPEG-4 because you're patenting the idea of MPEG-4. So,
I'm gonna see if I have a plugin available for it, and I'll check that out. See if it'll do it. Oh my God! There's a million GStreamer plugins.
Yeah, there is. It's ridiculous, man. At least with GStreamer 10, they packaged a lot of them into a few packages called Good, Bad, and Ugly, I think.
Yeah.
What is it's FAAD, isn't it? Yeah, I think I need that. Pac-Man.
Ain't it FAAC?
Is it FAAC?
It might be. I don't know.
Or is it FLAAC? FLAC.
Oh, FLAC, that's the open source lossless format.
That's telling me GStreamer FAD is up to date. So, I don't know.
Well, one of the reasons that Novell has a Helix plugin for Banshee is because then they can provide a real player and a Banshee, and then Banshee can play MP3s and AAC files through the Helix framework that real player provides. That's what they will do in the upcoming SuSE Enterprise desktop.
Wait, what were you saying there?
I just said that the reason Novell has a Helix support for Banshees because then they can, on the upcoming desktop enterprise product, they can provide real player and Banshee with MP3 and AAC support right out of the box.
Right.
Real player pays those licensing fees for the patents.
Yep. Well, Mune, I'm assuming it's pronounced Muin. Mune, M-U-I-N-E. Mono user interface neglected environment. I don't know. Well, you know, what we need in the Linux community on every homepage is not only... We need an about, a news, and a pronunciation key.
Yeah.
On how to actually pronounce some of these applications.
Yeah, it's because some open source applications have some ridiculous names.
Yeah, they do. It's insane.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I know Devin does, and he doesn't give a damn.
Yeah.
Devin, cool. Where do you live? Maryland, right?
Yeah.
What part of Maryland?
It's like in basically in the middle of it.
In the middle?
Frederick.
How far are you from Chesapeake Bay?
It's like an hour and a half or something.
How far are you from Virginia Beach?
I don't know. Never been to Virginia Beach.
Find that out.
All right.
So I might be coming to visit you soon.
Yeah, you better watch your back, Devin.
That's right. Lock up your daughters. Lock up your Devins. I need another camo now.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I didn't want to cut you off there, Trolls. Let's turn it back there to the media players, because, like I said, you're getting into the ones that I prefer.
Yeah, right now, today I want to talk about some... this is going to be a very short segment, because there's only so much you can say about command line programs, right?
There's a lot you can say about command line programs.
Yeah, if they only do it... Yeah, but if they only have one function... how much can you say about LS? That's my point.
There's a lot you can say about LS.
No, there isn't.
But maybe you can't bore... You end up boring a lot of people. But.
Yeah, but I can't say a lot about those commands. But anyway, I want to talk about some desktop agnostic programs. For example, if you notice, Amarok and Banshee sort of integrates or fits into GNOME and KDE. But there's also some players that kind of doesn't do any of that, either because the desktop that they used to do it with doesn't exist anymore, or because they're just simple command line programs. Okay, the first one I want to mention is called XMMS, and that's kind of it's really an old program, but it's very, very well known, and it works very well for what it does, actually. It's just a very simple Winamp 2 style music player, where you can... We can actually use Winamp 2 skins, so if you're a fan of Winamp 2, if you're coming from Windows, that is potentially a very, very interesting player for you. And it's XMMS history goes all the way back to 1997, I think. It's a very, very old player. It used to be a GNOME. I just lost my sentence there, but it's actually a GNOME 1 application. So if you're old school and still runs GNOME 1.x, XMMS would actually fit into that, because it uses the GNOME 1 file dialogs and all that stuff. But today GNOME 1 is kind of ancient, to say it nicely. So XMMS doesn't really fit into any desktop today. So it it doesn't really require any GNOME libraries besides GTK, which is not really a GNOME library, it's just a widget library.
KimToolkit.
Yeah, KimToolkit, that's right.
That's because XMMS transcends the desktop environment.
Well, at least it's sort of desktop agnostic these days. It doesn't really, they don't integrate into anything really. Because there's nothing that really uses GNOME 1X libraries anymore.
My personal opinion of XMMS is if I'm not using VLC, XMMS tends to be my audio player of choice.
Yeah, it has a shitload of plugins, I should mention. It has a crap load of plugins.
It does, and what XMMS isn't is like Amarok or some of the other... players which pull in your audio library, kind of trying to do the iTunes type thing. XMMS doesn't do that.
It has
XMMS is sort of like a Winamp thing,
right? Yeah.
It doesn't index your music, to say it.
No,
I didn't have much luck with XMMS. Like, it always crashed for me. I'm not
sure
why.
It had some issues in the past.
So I just use Beep.
You know what? It's interesting that you bring that up because XMMS, for me, up until about a year ago, had been extremely stable. And while I do not have a problem with XMMS crashing for general use, I do have a problem if I go to Options, Double Size, which will double the size of the XMMS player, it'll crash every time. And I'm not sure why. I am not sure why. And for people who use...
I just tried that beside. It worked fine.
It worked fine for you, but for about the past year... And actually, I've had two problems. One was the double size thing, but in conjunction with that, if I wanted to connect to a stream, listen to an audio stream, for some reason, I ended up starting having problems with it. I'd go in and wipe out my XMMS configuration, because it's really, you know, I don't really customize it that much. And I'd have to wipe it out for it to play certain streamed files, particularly MP3s. I'm not sure why. And again, this has only been in the past year when I've gone from... It started with Slackware, when I went into Debian, then to Ubuntu, and then into Arch. That problem has seemed to continue for me for some reason, which is really odd. But
one thing I've noticed is that I use SUSE Linux as my primary desktop, and there's a community repository for that called Pacman, P-A-C-K-M-A-N, not P-A-C-M-A-N like Arch does. But I noticed that the last 6 months, I think they have had some, either they have made some patches for XMMS themselves, or they have found somewhere or surprisingly, there might have been some upstream changes, because XMMS, the one that you can get from Pacman repository these days, don't crash all the time. I used to have a problem when I opened up the file dialog, and when I double clicked a file in that, it will crash. But if I clicked once on a file and selected, used the play button, then it would play fine. All those issues have kind of disappeared, and also. This XMMS has been reorganized a bit. It's much easier to get it to play CDs. It has a menu for that, and you can specify where your audio CDs get mounted, so it will play them from there. And it seems XMMS has had a little bit of development over there. It might, I don't know for sure, but at least something has happened there.
And in the XMMS and the Beep Media players, I think they support the old Winamp skins.
Yeah, I mentioned that they can use Winamp 2 skins.
You know what sets XMMS apart from every other media player out there? I'll tell you what sets it apart. Because they have a plugin, a visualization plugin called G-Dancer. And G-Dancer will give you Space Ghost on your desktop that'll
what?
Do a little dance.
What is that?
You don't know who Space Ghost is?
Not at all.
Devin, do you know who Space Ghost is?
No.
Yeah. Wait, let me. Space Ghost! You don't remember Space Ghost?
No.
Space Ghost was. Did you ever hear of Hanna-Barbera?
No.
Oh, man. Do you know. All right, Harvey Birdman. Jabberjaw. Damn it. Now I can't remember any of the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. It was a animation team, Hanna-Barbera, that did cartoons. Justice League. Batman.
I've heard of the Justice League, yeah.
Batman. The old Batman cartoons. The old Justice League cartoons. Not the new ones on Cartoon Network. But, oh, man, they did. There was an animation team back in the, I think, late 60s, early 70s called Hanna-Barbera. They did a ton of cartoons. One of them was Space Ghost. And Space Ghost was this this guy, a superhero, who had the capability of turning invisible. And he had, like, two teen sidekicks and a space monkey called Gleek. I can't remember the names of the two teens. think one was Jason or something like that. Anyway, it was a really cheesy cartoon, but back in the mid-90s to late 90s, Cartoon Network did a show called Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And it was a talk show that had the Space Ghost character in it. And he sat there and he was the, you know, and then there was Zorak and a couple other the Space Ghost villains in there. And they'd all do this talk show together. It was hilarious. Well, somebody put out a plugin for XMMS called G Dancer, which was Space Ghost behind his little desk on the talk show. And as you play music, it would do, he'd do different like dance moves and stuff. So it's a great, great plugin. It's funny as heck.
Yeah, so actually, when you the second you mentioned the name G Dancer, I thought you meant something like a stripper or something like that.
No, no, but it's Space Ghost, and of course that'll be up there for XMMS plugin.
I can just imagine a GNOME library for having a stripper on your desktop.
Well, you know what,
G Dancer.
If you want a stripper for your desktop, there is one out there.
No, I didn't say that.
It's called Hot Babe. Okay, and what Hot Babe does is, as your system processes and system resources increase, you know, the amount of system resources you use increases, more clothes come off the Hot Babe.
Oh, man.
And
the way you get that on Windows is clicking yes on that dialog that shows up in Internet Explorer.
Yes, but if you really want to take it to the next level, the tech show created a similar, using the Hot Babe source code, we created a similar application called Hot Link.
Oh, man, that's got to be scary. Hey,
and you know what? Hot Link actually works, and it's hilarious.
Oh. I just imagine you staring at Alan all day on that end.
And we're in the process of making the 0.0.2 release of Hotlink, but it just has not come to fruition yet.
No.
Oh, man. Anyway, I guess we'll
what would the next thing be? Hot Metzler or something?
Yeah, Hot Metzler. Actually, Hotlink 2 was going to include Hot Metzler. But, like I said, it hasn't gotten that far yet. Kind of development kind of teetered off after Hotlink because
the CVS server went down.
No, it's still the source code and everything is all available. It's just, I wonder if you could actually, I don't know if I ever set it up so it would be picked up by Google bots.
Well, you don't really have to do anything to do that. You just have to kind of, example, my blog was picked up automatically because it was linked to from another site.
Yeah, I'm gonna find out whatever happened to that. I know it's somewhere out there. It's on my server somewhere. I gotta figure out where that ended up at.
You need Beagle for that.
Beagle, yeah, that would be nice. Oh, Beagle.
Well, there's new KDE front end for it, so I use it.
I got the source code for it still. I wonder where the main web page is. Now, if you really want a copy of Hotlink, email me. Email logger, and I'll send you the URL for Hotlink.
just imagine what it's like.
I wonder if that actually runs still anymore. There's a 0.2 version, huh? I'm gonna compile that. All right, continue on.
Yeah, well, I think that wraps up the XMMS discussion because it's because that one really there isn't much to say about that except the way we just said. And then there's also a few command line programs I wanted to mention for playing music. And that's ARC123, MPG123, and MPG321. I don't know where the difference between those last two are. But they do the same thing. And
I think one is... I think what? The 321 is open source and the other one isn't. Or
really?
Something like that.
Oh, Hotlink still works.
Oh, man, Dan, quit that.
I'm using it right now.
Yeah, I can just imagine. Oh, my God.
It is too much, man.
Dan, has the beer already gone to your head?
Yeah.
Change your preferences off the sexes, right?
I'm going to see what... I forget what I did for version 2. Go ahead, continue on.
I'm just afraid of going on because in a minute you come again with that shit there. But no. There isn't really much to say about these command line programs. I just mentioned ARC123 and MPG331 and so forth. You just pop open a terminal and just type in the command and then space the file you want to play. Actually, I used some of them a few days ago because I have a Mac Mini which I run Fedora Core 5 on, which is connected to my 200 watt speakers at the stand on the side of my monitor, and then I just used SSH to make the Mac Mini play my some of my music through that because I didn't want to switch on my KVM switch all the time and make Banshee play the another song, so I just use SSH to make it play via ARC123. So that's the neat thing about command line programs. You can use them over remote control of some sort.
You're talking, yeah, I like ARC123. I use that all the time. If I want to try out an ARC file or on the tech show, for instance, if I'm going to play some audio files, I will use ARC123.
Okay. Well, that's they are very handy sometimes, especially because I think they output directly to ALSA, so they're good for testing that you have your sound card configured correctly also.
Yeah, you can redirect it to different packages. And you know what? You bring up ALSA, which is a good point. One of the things that I wanted to make a mention of with XMMS is people who have been using like KDE, older versions of KDE that depend on ARTS, be aware that XMMS by default might be set up to use OSS or ALSA and not ARTS. And when you try and run
XMMS... I think by default it uses something called automatic detection, so it
right.
would try to detect what to use.
But some of the... yeah, sometimes in different distributions you'd have a problem playing something through XMMS because it was set to a different... or wouldn't pick up the ARTS by default.
Well, you can just... one of the easiest things to do these days is just to get a hardware mixing sound card, because sometimes you can accidentally sounds can block out each other if you need to do software mixing, and sometimes it doesn't work so well.
Because we can all just go out and afford a hardware mixing sound card, right?
It costs $10, man.
$10. Which one do you use?
SoundBlaster Live 5.1.
I got a SoundBlaster Live over here that I need to plug into my system.
Yes, I mean, the good thing about that specific SoundBlaster card, it works very well on both Linux and BSD. And I use FreeBSD a lot, more and more these days, so it's that's a good cross-platform sound card. Of course it works on Windows, too.
I found ARTS basically makes everything work.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Which kind of defeats the purpose of ARTS, but...
Actually, one thing I noticed in SUSE 10.1, it doesn't even have the KDE bindings for ARTS installed by default.
I just hope that with Phonom,
Phonom.
Yeah. I just hope that we're not going to look at a updated ARTS replacement that's going to be as problematic.
Well, they aren't.
As
the KDE guys have learned from their mistakes, so. I think that's the kind of the beauty of open source, because you can go back and look at old source code and see what not to program.
Yeah. ARTS is definitely a what not to program.
Yeah, actually I have got it working a few times. It's not that hard to get working these days, actually, I think. No. Especially if you have a hardware mixing sound card, then it's easy to get working. Because that's kind of the way where things go wrong when you have to mix sounds. I think you can get it working, but it takes a little bit of effort sometimes, tweaking some settings in KDE and stuff like that. But luckily, Arch has already been removed from the KDE source tree, so for KDE 4. So,
and I know that disappoints Devin.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's the guy from the GStreamer development team named Christian. I just read his blog the other day, and he was bashing Farnan because it didn't standardize on one particular framework. And then Aaron Seigel from KDE replied and said basically, with Arch we made the mistake of standardizing on one specific framework. And that didn't hold up over the years. So with Farnan, when not standardizing on one specific framework, you can use multiple backends. So that if time passes on and GStreamer becomes obsolete, then we can just use whatever is current at the time. So that's what's good about Farnan. And it's not kind of frozen into one specific point in time. It's not locked into GStreamer. It's not locked into NMM or Helix or whatever. You can use whatever you want. And actually, other thing I noticed about it is that you can have per application volumes settings with Farnan. And for example, if you were listening to some background music or something like that, you can have it very low volume. And then if you have a VoIP application, you can have it full volume. So you have some background music and your VoIP application. That's pretty cool, I think.
MPG 123 is another command line utility.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that. Actually, that's just for playing MP3s. So.
And you know what? I think the actual package is called MPG 321 because it's open source. Does the opposite? The open package does the opposite of it. Something like that. Just like it's going to require LAME, if I'm not mistaken, which is LAME is not an MP3 encoder or something like that.
LAME is an encoder. You probably need the MATLAB.
I think it stands for LAME, another MP3 encoder.
But LAME ain't an encoder or something.
It's essentially, like, I think it's supposed to be the best quality MP3 encoder. And it's free.
And if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Trolls, but from what I understand, is the reason why MP3 support is not included out of the box in most distributions is because technically MP3 playback is not free software, and that's not released under the GPL, and a lot of the media players are released under the GPL. Therefore, including MP3 support is kind of a violation of the GPL for distribution purposes. But you, as a consumer, can download the capability of providing support for these GPL players, MP3 support for these GPL players, because you choose to do so. But a distribution, because it cannot include the source code for MP3, cannot do that for you.
Well, that's not correct, actually, because it's not the GPL that prohibits MP3 support out of the box. It's the patents that prohibits that.
Well, it is the patents, but because GPL software says that you need to include...
No. Dan, there's a library called MAD, MPEG Audio Decode, and that's released under the GPL, so you can link it to whatever player you want to. So there is a GPL MP3 plugin out there, but then you have the software patents of the United States, and those come right down there and says, no, you can't distribute this library. So it's not that there ain't free software to play MP3s with. It's just that the patents make those programs illegal because of two reasons. Both because the makers of the MAD library hasn't paid a license fee for MP3, MPEG 1, and MPEG 2, and also I just completely forgot what I was about to say. Happens a lot these days, doesn't it? But it's because of the patents.
Right. It all comes down to patents, which really suck.
Yeah, if you go to underbit.com, you can slash product slash mad, then you can find a mad library right there. So now we just officially broke the law in the U.S. So watch out, Dan.
If I'm not mistaken, mad is provided by Slackware.
Yeah, it is, probably is. Actually, I noticed that is provided by FreeBSD, too. That there are some distributions that are being brave these days.
They probably say that you can't install it if you're in the United States or something like that.
Maybe.
To save their ass. You know.
But, yeah, definitely. You know, there is capability of doing that. And it all comes down to commercial royalties, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
it is. The MP3 patent is if you make over like $1 million in sales on your MP3, you have to pay royalties to the MP3 patent holder.
Yeah, well, actually, I just remember what I lost a few seconds ago. The reason, the other reason, because you can't distribution can't include MP3 support through the MAD libraries, because they haven't paid the upstream license agreement, but because the GPL is incompatible with the license you can get from Fraunhofer.
Right.
Because what the GPL does is, for example, if I take out a license for the MP3 patents and I make a GPL program and then I give it to you, then I have to give you the freedom to use the patents for whatever you want.
Right.
And I can't do that because I don't own the patents. So if I owned the MP3 patent, I could do that, but I don't do that. But I don't. So
what you should do, trolls, is purchase the MP3 patent for everybody to be able to use.
Well, that's what I can't do because you have each person that has to take out a license for it. That once I think it's very complicated. I hate licenses. Besides GPL, of course.
And that's why we are accepting donations for the MP3 patch.
Well, actually, there's another way to get free MP3 support. If you install SUSE Linux 10.1, there's an install Real Player on it. Then you can use there's a Helix plugin for Amarok and Banshee. You can use to play MP3s in there. So if you use a Real Player and then have the Helix bindings for Amarok in here and Banshee, you can play MP3s legally.
There's also that Fluendo thing.
Yeah, but that's kind of complicated too, so we don't want to go into that.
Now, there's been one media player that you have not brought up, if I'm not mistaken. M-Player.
Yeah, I was actually good. I was just about to mention that one.
Okay, good.
I think I have mentioned at least one KD and one GNOME M-Player front-end. And what a front-end basically does is it takes that command line program and puts a GUI around it, so it's easy to use. But MPlayer has a command line interface which you can use pop open the terminal, type MPlayer space the file you want to play. And the good thing about MPlayer is that it can function both as a music player and as a video player, so you can play videos and stuff like that.
Yeah, MPlayer is probably my predominant video player under Linux.
Yeah, I use it too, just for KD front end.
Yeah,
and they have a product called MPlayer plugin.
It works through Firefox, right?
Yeah, and I personally think that is the penultimate plugin for media files under Firefox. I've tried the Gzine plugin.
Yeah, it doesn't work so
and
well.
And what I don't like about Gzine plugin is that it invariably brings up a separate window for playing it, whereas MPlayer's plugin embeds it into the browser like the QuickTime or Windows Media Player. And
yeah, actually, if a user out there just migrated to Linux from Windows, you can use that MPlayer plugin as kind of a replacement for Windows Media Player for embedding into the browser.
I love MPlayer plugin.
Yeah, it's great. Actually, one of the things that's great about MPlayer is that they are based in Hungary, so they don't have to worry about violating patents.
No.
And they're not afraid to do so because I think they've violated probably every single multimedia patent out there.
That's right. And you know what? We should probably put that as a disclaimer that MPlayer allows you to play just about any kind of codec out there through the They make a codec package available for download, which will do about any codec out there. And most distributions, I think, distribute it in a non-free or, you know, more advanced repositories.
No, Red Hat and SUSE don't.
But there's a repository where you can get it. I know you can because I installed it under SUSE.
Yeah, yeah.
It's usually called the Win32 codecs.
Actually, one of the things to hear this, both Cyan and Emplia can do is that they can use Windows 32 binary DLL files for plot file codecs. And the Emplia has provided a package of a huge collection of Windows DLL files that you can just use.
Right, and you could use Windows Media Player, QuickTime.
Yeah, Real Player.
DivX, Xvid, and, you know, Emplia.
Well, Xvid is open source, so you don't need a Windows binary.
No, you don't, but Emplia can play it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Emplayer is the I personally prefer that overall. Aside from VLC, Video LAN Client, like Video LAN Client and Emplayer, video files and DVDs, and Zine, I prefer Zine for DVDs, actually.
Yeah, I was about to say, Zine is better for DVDs.
And it's hard because I really like Zine, but the Zine plugin for Emplayer just...
Zine plugin for Emplayer...
For Firefox, in my opinion, I don't like it. I think Emplayer does a far better job.
Yeah, and also Emplayer is very good at handling Windows 30, Windows Media, I was about to say.
Yeah, it does a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess the only other thing for playing video, other than Emplayer and Emplayer plugin and Zine plugin, is you got Flash.
Yeah, well, Flash. Right now, you really only have the kind of the binary plugin from Macromedia. But the GNU project is working on a plugin called a program called Ganache. So,
have you played around with Ganache?
No, I'm waiting for 1.0 release because I'll admit I use the binary only Macromedia plugin because Ganache is not prime time yet. But I can guarantee you, right the moment Ganache goes 1.0, I'll take that Macromedia plugin and feed the neighbor's dog with it because it's just ugly to look at.
You know what? I've used Ganache and they're really doing a good job with it, in my opinion. But it's still not up to snuff for a lot of things like my kids like to go do.
Yeah, and now Flash 8.5 is coming out, man.
That's what really ticks me off about Macromedia is they basically said we're releasing Flash 8 for Windows and OS 10, but Linux users you're gonna have to wait till 8.5.
Yeah.
Has there been a release date for 8.5 yet?
Nope.
And that's really starting to become a problem for me because like a lot of the sites my kids go to. Are starting to move over to 8.0 version of Flash.
Yeah.
And they can't view it. They're like, well, why can't we see what's going on here? And I'm like, you got to understand that, you know, they haven't released that plugin yet. It's really obnoxious and unfortunate.
Yeah.
And they need to release one for AMD 64.
Right. And, you know...
I'm tired of running binary Firefox for that.
Well, how much faster can you surf, man?
Well, no, I'm using Conquer for my main browser.
Okay,
and then I use binary Firefox for Flash websites.
How is, you know, not sticking with AMD 64, but with just, you know, just 32-bit, I have found Conquer to be a little bit problematic with doing Flash files.
Well, actually, one of the things about Conquer is that you can use Netscape plugins. So you can just plug the Macromedia plugin right into Conquer, and I found it to work great.
I've had mixed results with that. I mean, Conquer, I think as a file manager and anything else is like, there is nothing really better than Conquer for that.
But for web browsing,
I found it a little bit.
The only thing I found irritating about Conquer as a web browser is that it's not quite as robust as Firefox is.
Right. And
But it's because sometimes it has some issues rendering if some specific pages. Firefox is good at handling pages written with Internet Explorer in mind, and but that's not to blame Conker. I'm blaming the website for that. You're a bunch of bastards if you only code for Internet Explorer. But Conker is just, I think it's very, very close. I'm beginning to use it more and more as a web browser because it's fast.
Firefox was crashing on me like every other minute, so I just switched to Conqueror. I found the JavaScript support, like when it does like the drop-down menus and such. Sometimes it doesn't work that well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess hopefully that will be improved soon.
Hmm.
But overall, it's a pretty good.
Well, even a hardcore XFCE guy, we know got to try KDE the other day. So, that's all good. But that's all I have for the multimedia players. I think I don't think I have there's anything else to say about that for this week. So next week I'll just whenever next week's next episode of Lark, I'll just mention some DVD or video editing tools.
And that will
wrap up this whole thing.
Hi, this is Gerard Butler, and you're on.
See,
Apple.
My problem with Conqueror is as I want to say, it's not good for displaying, like, QuickTime and Flash and stuff like that. I'm sitting here trying to test stuff out and prove that I am wrong, and it's really not doing it for me.
Well, Conqueror's not.
Because now it's playing previews and crap like that, and you guys can't hear it, but I am playing something through there, and it's using Gzyme plugin, and of course. For some reason, Gzyme plugin is embedding itself into the Conqueror window.
What?
Yes.
How can a GNOME program embed itself in a KDE window?
Dude, don't ask me, but I've just been kind of proven wrong a little bit here about Conqueror. And
what Conqueror basically does is that if you have Caffeine installed, it will use Caffeine to play whatever video you try to play via it.
So yeah, well, you know what? I'm gonna have to take another look at Conqueror because I've just been proven wrong there because I've been playing.
Actually, Daniel, I think you misunderstood here because Conqueror doesn't play it itself. It just embeds a video player that can find into itself.
Right, and it's I ran it through a terminal window, and I can see what's going on in the background, and it's pulling up Zine.
Yeah, okay.
And you know what? It pulled it up, and you guys don't hear it because the playback is not coming through over Skype. But for the people who actually listen to this, you'll actually hear a little bit of the video that I was playing through Conqueror, and I'm going to have to definitely give it another look.
We're all sharing Dan's porn.
It wasn't porn. It was off the QuickTime site.
Okay. I could just imagine it was something like that.
If you want me to bring up some porn...
No. I have my own for that.
Yeah, there you go, huh? But,
I think I have a 10 gig collection or something like that.
Holy crap.
Like, yeah, I was just thinking the other day, whose porn collection is bigger, mine or Dan's?
You know what? I don't really have a porn collection.
Okay.
So.
You don't want your wife to find it?
No, I mean, I got a couple of DVDs, but other than that, I don't really have a porn collection.
Actually, I think my entire collection in total, if you include the stuff I have on my server, I think is about 40 gigs.
40 gigs? Holy crap.
It's just a bunch of DVD riffs I have. But it's just a collection, man. Just stashed away.
Yeah, that's what you say now, but when we're done recorded, we know what you're doing. You're surfing Alexa and watching porn.
No. If I'm watching porn, I'm using the player to do that. Sorry, I just killed this whole conversation.
Oh,
screaming kids in the back!
Can you hear them?
Yeah.
I think somebody showed up at the door. Hold on. Let me hit the pause button. Hold on. Yeah. Okay. My daughter just came back from sleepover birthday party.
What?
My daughter just came back from a sleepover birthday party.
Oh, okay.
And then the dog got all excited and peed all over the floor.
Oh, man, what a mess.
Yeah, well, I'm not down there cleaning up, but the wife is, so.
Yeah, good excuse when recording lager, right?
That's it, yeah. And you know what? That's the thing. There is so many media player choices under Linux.
And that, Unix in general.
And Unix in general. What's nice about the major ones is they're cross-platform. And yeah. I think if I had to choose one media player, cross-platform media player that pretty much, you know, does it all for me, would have to be Video LAN Client.
Well, if I would say mPlayer for me.
Yeah.
You think so? Have you run mPlayer under other operating systems?
Yeah, FreeBSD, which is great.
I'm talking about OS X and Windows, too.
Well, you mean for Windows. Well, I think there is an mPlayer port for Windows, but I don't think it's that stable, so I haven't tried it. If I don't use Windows, I can't really tell. But when my sister runs Windows, because she insists on using it because she wants to play Sims 2 and have the Microsoft MSN Messenger client, which apparently I hear has a lot of funky functionality, a lot of bloated stuff. But I set her up with VLC.
Yeah, I think the Windows mPlayer client sucks.
I've never tried it a
long time ago, but it was, you had to go into the command line. The Windows command line, which is like, you don't want to touch that thing. And it didn't have a, like you had to use the shortcut keys because it didn't have a control widget or whatever.
Okay.
And so I just use, I have portable VLC on my iAudio. And whenever I go to a Windows box, I just use that.
Yeah, I love, you know, under OS X, and I've used it a little bit under Windows, but I just absolutely love VLC on a cross-platform. mPlayer does a great job on Linux, but I prefer VLC under OS X.
I think I just found a Windows release of mPlayer.
Yeah, it's available for all the operating systems, but... My personal preference is for VLC under anything but Linux, but if I'm doing, like, 90% of my video play under Linux is going to be under mPlayer for me.
Yeah. One of the things I don't like about VLC is that it's a GTK / GNOME program, because I don't like having... I like having everything nice and integrated, and I use KDEs.
You and your Qt-based applications.
Yeah, Qt.
Cute.
Yeah, well, and then I noticed that some ignorant GNOME developers still argue that Qt is not free, even though it's released under the GPL.
And you know what it ultimately comes down to is Qt, GTK, hopefully, you know, I mean, they're getting to the point where you can do the GTK under KDE and Qt under GNOME.
Of course.
Or any environment for that matter, for any of those.
Well, yeah,
it's not becoming an issue anymore.
Well, I've never had a problem running GTK applications on the KDE. It's not that. I just like the close integration and interaction between applications that KDE offers. For example, if you notice, Contact, the KDE PIMP solution, is about just a combination of all different types of KDE programs, like KMail and KAddress Book and the Aggregator Newsreader and so forth, just kind of merged into one.
Uh-huh.
Through the KDE has some technology called K-parts that actually allows for applications to embed themselves into each other, which is very cool. That's, by the way, what Conqueror uses for you for embedding caffeine into it.
You mean Xine or GXine?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Caffeine.
I guess.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Never mind. What just happened there?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Lies. Lies. And more lies. All right, so that kind of closes it up. for this week for your multimedia player reviews, yes?
Yeah, that's right. Next week I'll just finish it all off, and I'll have some I'll mention some video editing, whatever is available on the next. I have to do some research on that.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on to the GP2X stuff.
Okay.
Because we haven't done a little thing, and you know what? I got to say, if you the GP2X just keeps getting better. It just keeps getting better.
Lady Killer got a new word, so what?
They released firmware 2.0 a little less than a month ago, and let me tell you, man, this firmware upgrade is like, it's phenomenal. We're talking under a 10-second boot here, turning this thing on. From turn on to functional screen is night and day compared to the older releases. In the past, I would turn it on, like, from when I'm walking out of my house, get in a car and plug it in, and a few seconds later be able to go. Like, I turn this thing on, I don't even get off my porch, and it's ready to go. I mean, the firmware 2.0 upgrade is spectacular. And not only is the boot time increased, but battery life has dramatically increased. I am amazed at the battery life I get on this thing now. You know, I used to go through about 3 to 4 hours into my work day before I had to replace the battery. And that means going from my house into work into playing a little before lunch, and I'd replace my battery. Now I'm after lunch. I mean, I'm getting like really great battery uptime with this, with the firmware 2.0. You know, there's also some other minor things on here. Like when you turn it on now, it plays a little jingle, which might not be, you know, a deal breaker for this. But you have more stuff that you can customize and tweak in this. Under the setup menu, there's a new system icon that you can click on and configure different things with regards to the boot process and system configuration, whether sound's turned on or off by default. So, you know, definitely, if you own a GP2X, you want to make sure that you upgrade to the 2.0 firmware. It's night and day difference. Now, the upgrade process for the firmware, unfortunately, they still recommend that you use a FAT32 formatted SD flash card. You pull the firmware down on there, you just plug the card in, you start it up, and it'll automatically load in the new firmware for the boot process. But there's a little
violating patents every day.
No, I don't think they're violating patents, because if I'm not mistaken, they are licensing the patents to be able to do different things on here. And they have released the source code for the firmware and the applications on here that they include.
Well, I was talking about the Linux implementation of FAT32, remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you know what? I don't know if I would assume that maybe, and that's my mistake, it could be, but I think they are paying the patent for the FAT32, but I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
We don't have a lawyer on this time, so we can't tell.
Yeah, we don't. But one thing you need to be aware of from upgrading to other versions of the firmware is after you initially boot and it says it's upgrading the firmware, you're going to get into the green screen and it'll stay there forever. You have to actually shut it off, turn it back on, and hold the select and start key down during the boot process. It'll upgrade the firmware. And mine took just a few minutes to do. But they do recommend, if you have it, to plug it into an AC adapter and do it that way so that it, you know, you don't risk bricking it if for some reason your batteries burn out before the firmware upgrades. Barring using an AC adapter, definitely use freshly charged batteries or brand new batteries if you're not using rechargeables. And, of course, as we always recommend, 24 to 2500 mAh batteries for these things. But in addition to the firmware upgrade, I gotta say, there is one game on this thing that I have been addicted to for the past week and a half, 2 weeks. And I can't stop playing this thing. It's becoming a problem, because I will sit down and just like play this game for a few minutes, and next thing I know, about an hour and a half has gone away. My wife called me up the other day. She's like, yeah, I'm ready to be picked up for work. If you leave in 15 minutes, that'll be great. You know, so I sat down. I started playing this game. 45 minutes later, she called me and said, "Where am I?" Which is not a good thing. And I said, yeah, I'm on my way. I had ended up playing this game for 45 minutes and not realizing it. What it is, it is part of what's called the mini games, which we touched on a few weeks ago. It's called the Mini Game Project. And this game I've been playing is called Extender. It's a really, you know, basic, simple game. What it is you are like this like flowery type icon. It's like a box, but it's more like a flower. And what happens is you have these little squares that come out. Now, these squares are either individual squares or they're in V formations. And it could be in a formation of three or a formation of five. And when you press the X button on here, your box explodes. And it forms like a little explosion. It's pretty, you know, a circle that extends out from where you were originally on the screen. And if that circle, that explosion circle, touches one of those boxes explode in a similar circle, and so on. And the object of this game is to create an explosion that extends itself across all the other objects on the game, on the screen. Okay? And aside from that, there's one other box that comes out. It's a green box. And if you hit the green box, you get what's called the quicken. Now, the quicken increases the speed and number of boxes that come out on the screen. So as you progress through the game, if you get like 14 quickens, you have a better chance of filling up the screen with boxes so that when you explode your icon, you're going to blow up, you know, like 30 to 70 boxes on the screen. You could create a chain reaction, and that increases your score. It's pretty simple, but it's really, really difficult game to actually get a really, really high score on, because you have approximately 2 minutes of play time per game on this, and you have a limited number of explosions that you can do. You start off with let me pull it up here. You start off with a limited number of explosions that you can perform. And that number to start off with is, uh, 12. Now, if within like the first 20 seconds, if you can get a chain reaction of, like usually like 5 boxes or more, you automatically increase your explosion time, explosion quantity to maybe 19. 19 is the highest I've ever gotten so far. And as you progress through the game, there's certain like points that you can make. If you get a certain amount of combos in the game, that doesn't count against you as an explosion. You retain the same number of explosions that you started out with. Like if I had like 9 explosions left and I had a 20 combo, it's my first 20 combos, it doesn't reduce my stock explosions left. But the next time I did a 20, I'd probably drop down to 11. So if you increase the number of combos that you would get throughout the game, chances are you'll either earn more combos or earn more stock explosions, or you'll stay at the same. It's a little, I'm not exactly sure what the algorithm is for that, but that's kind of the way it plays out. But it is extremely addicting game, extremely fun, the Mini Green Project. Another game that I wanted to talk about with the GP2X that I remember I wanted to bring up last week is a game called, it's kind of a Western game. It's called Bang. And Bang is, do you guys have arcades where you are?
Nope. What?
Do you guys have an arcade?
No, I haven't seen one of those for years, actually.
Really?
They completely disappeared.
Oh, wow. Devin, arcades for you? Or, like, movie theaters have a lot of arcade games in them?
Yeah, but there are none really right near me, because I live next to nowhere.
Okay.
But in the city.
Okay. Yeah. About the time when arcades were kind of disappearing, they started coming out with a lot of light gun-based games where you have a gun. Area 51 is one. Time Crisis, I think, was another, where you would take a gun and you'd shoot at stuff on the screen. Bang is kind of in that tradition. It's got an 1800s Western theme to it, okay? And what you do is you have a little cursor on the screen. You move the cursor around with the joystick, and you have bullets, and you shoot stuff on the screen. And you got different little mini games again this time. And, you know, there's like a skeet shoot type thing. There's a train robbery or stagecoach robbery where they're throwing money bags out of the back of the stagecoach, and the bad guys are trying to catch them in their little nets, and you got to shoot the money bags before they hit the stagecoach net. And, of course, Trolls, you're going to like this, okay? There is there's a level on there where there's a chick in a bathtub, okay? And she's taking a bath, and
In what game?
In Bang. This is okay. On the GP2X. She's taking a bath, she's scrubbing herself, and bubbles are going up on the screen, and you got to shoot the bubbles. And there's other cool things in there, like there's a mirror and a couple candles, and you can shoot the mirror and break the mirror, and you can shoot the candles and snuff out the flame, and you shoot the bubbles. But if you happen to shoot the chick, she gets really upset, and she like gets all big-eyed and stuff. You know, she pops out of the bathtub, and she's, of course, she's not naked because she's got, like, soap bubbles all over. And she, like, gives you this dirty look, and you lose some points. But, you know, Bang is definitely a game to check out for the GP2X. Pretty cool. Pretty fun game. I don't know if there's a Linux equivalent to that, but it is a lot of fun. The Minigame Project and Bang are two thumbs up for that. But, you know, definitely move to the 2.0 firmware. And that's going to close up my GP2X section. And if you guys don't have a GP2X, I think over in Europe they're starting to sell those through retail channels over there.
I've never seen one anywhere in Denmark, so not even online. So,
I mean, I'm really loving this thing.
I don't use devices like that because I just don't have much, have the cash for it. And after what I saw at E3, I just have to save money for the Nintendo Wii when it comes out.
Well, definitely. Nintendo Wii is a must-have.
Do we have any more to talk about? Because I have a few things I think we could talk about at E3. But even though a lot of sites did that, I thought...
We do have two games to bring up.
Okay, but, go ahead and talk about those.
We want to bring those up. You might have heard on the tech show the other day, Pat started playing a game called Barrage. No?
Oh, you were asking us.
Yeah, well, anyway, okay. Barrage is a simple but fun game. Essentially what Barrage is you are on a battlefield, okay, and you got troops running on the battlefield, you got tanks, you got jeeps running up and down the screen, and you are a gun cannon on the left side of the screen. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it is a multiplayer game. Let me bring it up here. It's a single-player game, but you have a gun cannon on the left side of the screen, and you fire your gun off, and the object of the game is you have like 3 minutes to destroy everything on the screen. And as guys are running up and down the screen, you gotta, you know, shoot your cannon and hit the guys. And of course there's just a little bit of physics involved, so when you lob a bullet into the battlefield, you gotta, you know, time it just right so it'll actually hit whatever target you're trying to hit, like a jeep or people running or a tank, and these things move at different speeds. And it's a 3 minute, you know, 3 minutes you sit down and play. It's a really addicting game. It's really fun. It's a simple game, and I recommend highly checking it out. I believe it's also cross-platform too. Now, Barrage is put out by a project called L Games. Okay, and you can find that at lgames.sourceforge.net. And in addition to Barrage, they have a handful of other games, one of which is called L Breakout, and Breakout 2 is the more modern version of that. And from my understanding, and I'm thinking back, I remember playing L Breakout at least 5 or 6 years ago. So these are like oldie but goodie games. And Breakout is essentially a clone of the Breakout game that I believe Atari or was it Apple that first put it out, or Atari actually had first put it out. If you had an Atari 2600 or any derivation thereof, the 2400, the 5200, there was Breakout versions for that. There was in the arcade. There was a game called Arkanoid in the arcade that was essentially the same thing. What Breakout is you have on your screen, you have a chunk of blocks about it at the top of the screen, and you have a little paddle at the bottom that you move to the left or right, and you have a ball that you bounce back and forth between that you hit.
Dan's talking about bouncing balls.
Right. You launch your
sorry.
Ball. Yeah, you launch your ball from this paddle at the bottom of the screen, and you hit the blocks at the top, and you knock a block out, and then the ball comes back down, and you got to position your paddle so that you catch the ball so it bounces off, kind of like a tennis-type game. And the object of the game is to knock out all the blocks. Now, I think the original Breakout, what would happen is as time progressed, the blocks would start descending kind of like Space Invader style on the screen. And as you took more time, they'd descend faster. There's other things that happen that after you break a certain number of blocks, the speed of the ball increases. And if you hit the top of the screen, the size of your paddle decreases. So the ball goes faster, your paddle decreases. Well, L Breakout 2 takes into consideration all these things and more. Certain blocks that you hit drop down, little augmentation blocks. You can either get some points on there. You can increase the size of your paddle. You can decrease it. You increase the speed of the ball. You can create a sticky paddle where you can grab the ball as it hits your paddle and position it to where you want to let it go. You can get multi-balls. It's a really, really, really fun game, L Breakout. A caution, though, for people who want to play this game with kids, there is a little bit of swearing in there. If you miss a ball, sometimes it'll say a curse word, like shit or damn, it'll say. So if you have little kids, you might want to change some of the sound files on there by hand so that it doesn't curse at you when you miss the ball. But definitely a fun game worth checking out. I recommend you guys check it out, too.
Yeah, okay. I just played it a couple of minutes ago.
It is it's an old-school game. It's fun. And you know what? To be honest with you, this game does not require a lot of system resources because I was running it this weekend on a Pentium 200 with 32 megs of RAM, and it ran flawlessly.
Nice.
And there's another game. I got to plug this other game, and I don't really want to review it right now so much as other to say that this game ran also flawlessly. It was called Circus Linux, and it is a clone of an old game on Atari 2600, and I think that was also out in the arcade called Circus. And what it is you have two clowns on a seesaw, and you got a series of balloons at the top of the screen, and the object of the game is a clown drops out of the left side of the screen, bounces on a trampoline, and goes up into the air, and you gotta position your seesaw to catch the clown. And as the clown hits the one side of the seesaw, the other clown bounces up into the air. And the object of the game is to hit all the balloons and destroy all the balloons at the top of the screen. So you got these bouncing clowns back and forth. And again, 200 megahertz machine with 32 megs of RAM. It ran flawlessly. And I'll be bringing those games up on a future show because they're really cool. I like L Games, the games that this guy produced, Circus Linux, Bug Squish, and a few others are really great games for low-end systems. Mm. For any system. And for kids. The L Games has another project out there called L Pairs, which my kids love to play. L Pairs is a memory game where you have a series of tiles on the screen. I believe it by default it is comes up with a 6x5, so you have 30 tiles on the screen. And it's a memory game where you click on one of the tiles, it turns over and it shows you an icon. And then you click on another tile and it turns over and shows you an icon. And the object of the game is to match all the tiles, you know, to remember where that those tiles that you started turning over are, so that later on when you overturn a tile that matches that tile, you go back and click on it, and you can beat the board in a really low time. So that's L pairs. And there's two others. There's L Tris, which is a clone of Tetris, and L General, which is a turn-based strategy game, kind of in a tradition of Panzer General. So I haven't played L General or L Tris to any extent, but I have played L Pairs, L Breakout Barrage, and the last one is L Marbles, where you have to replicate a pattern on the screen using marbles. It reminds me a lot of Sokoban, where you have a you move the marbles around, but because of the environment the way it is, like if you move a marble, it's going to go all the way across the screen until it hits something. So you have a different, like, kind of like a maze in there where you kind of position the marbles so they'll form the pattern, but you got to be careful not to make the marbles end up in a position where you can't move them anymore. But something to check out. So the L Games URL will be posted on the website. Two thumbs up for those. And that's all I have for game reviews today.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, Dan, I think you mentioned running, if you were to run a media player on a Windows or OS 10, you would use VLC, didn't you say that?
Yes.
I just looked on the, just dug around on the MPlayer website, and I found some Windows MPlayer packages or whatever you could call it. It looked to work. I don't know. I haven't tried it, but
I haven't tried Windows MPlayer on Windows so much because I very rarely use Windows anymore. Like I'll use OS 10, but
But just in case you know, there is something. Do you remember that the Windows Media Player 6 series, that very, very minimal player? Kind of where you only have a black window and then the file menu kind of thing.
What's that?
Well, I'll just send you a picture up. I think that's easier to
it's like a Windows Media Player Classic or whatever it is called.
Yeah. Look in the IRC, there's...
In the IRC.
Yep.
Bum, bum, bum. Oh, I got to put that link up on the website then. There we go.
Yeah, this. Well, there are a few. There are a bunch of Windows Windows specific MPlayer projects. So, if you have to use Windows, you have to use Office or something like that. There are MPlayer for Windows, and that's good because Windows Media Player is just getting to be a bloated, crappy DRM application.
Yep. What are you gonna do?
That's a good question.
So you want to talk about E3?
Yeah, I just wanted to. Did you guys follow what happened down there?
For the most part.
I followed it a little bit. I mean, I could have been a little more diligent in doing it, but...
I just did the stuff about Nintendo, basically.
Yeah, I was really interested in the Nintendo crap that came out.
It's not crap, it's good stuff.
Oh, no, yeah, you're right. I mean, I really liked the Zelda stuff I saw, and I'm really psyched about Mario Galaxies.
That
looked really great, man. That looked really cool. And also, one of the things they announced is, one of the things they showed during the press conference is a game by Ubisoft called Red Steel. I'm really excited about that. That's a kind of a first-person shooter game, but you also have to do sword fighting in that. Imagine, that's for the upcoming Wii console. Sword fighting with that controller. Imagine how cool that would be.
Oh, yeah. And what they were showing was Zelda with the bow and arrow and stuff like that.
Yeah, did you see the press conference?
I didn't see the whole thing. I watched some clips from it.
Okay, I can send you a link for the complete thing.
Yeah, send me that link. I'd be appreciative of that.
Yeah, no, I'll just do that. But I listened to some of the podcasts from some of the gaming sites, and they say that the bow and arrow stuff in the Zelda doesn't work so well. But I just had to wait and see.
Well, definitely, it's not coming out for another 2 or 3 months yet.
Yes, they didn't. They during the press conference they didn't say a release date or a price. They only said Q4 2006.
So yeah,
I don't know. And since Reggie, the guy that was on the press conference, since he said that you will be playing Wii in Q4 2006, since he said that to a U.S. journalist and stuff like that, I'm assuming that it will be a release in the United States in the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's going to include Europe in that, or if I only can buy it after Christmas. So
what I've heard is we're looking at September, October, I think.
I think it's going to be October because, but you don't know. Maybe they all have them all made already and stashed up in the factory. Who knows?
It's possible. And you know what? I'm probably the worst person to provide an opinion on this because I am a Nintendo fanboy, but I have never, never been disappointed by a Nintendo system or pretty much any game that Nintendo itself has made.
I've also been a very big fan of Nintendo for years and years, but they just have good designers, and also one of the things that's unique about Nintendo is that they're both a software and a hardware company. So
right.
when they're making a new console, they can just the people that do hardware and software work in the same office building in Japan. So the hardware guys can just walk over to software guys and ask, "Does this work?" And then you can see if it doesn't work or it does work. So that's a good thing.
Have you played... Go ahead.
Also, one of the things they said about the Zelda game is that even though the Wii is not going to have HD TV support, it can do 480p, which is like a very good DVD, you know, on a HD TV.
Right.
The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess. If you get the Wii version of that game, you will be able to use a widescreen image, not just a stretched image, but kind of like opened up image where you can see more. So that's going to be really cool. First Zelda on widescreen.
Have you guys ever played Pikmin?
Yes, yeah, Pikmin is awesome.
See, when I first read Pikmin, now I'm a kind of guy that likes Resident Evil and Metroid and those kind of games. When I first heard of Pikmin, I was like, this game is not going to interest me at all. But I heard so many people say this is a great game that, when I got it, I finally went around and purchased it based upon what other people have been saying. I could not put the damn game down.
Yeah, I know.
It was an awesome game.
And, Super Monkey Ball is another one I hear is, like, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think also, the Pikmins were too short, but other than that, the gameplay was really innovative. Like, it was different than most other games I've ever played.
I think there is a Pikmin 2, isn't there?
I have them both, yeah.
There needs to be a Pikmin DS.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's probably in the development, and I hope that we'll have a Pikmin for the
Well, actually, Wii. They announced a whole bunch of DS games. They actually announced a new Zelda for the DS that actually picks up where Wind Waker left off.
Yeah, I saw that.
Phantom Hourglass, it's called. Go ahead.
What I am psyched for is apparently there's a Wii version of Donkey Kong coming out. And there hasn't been, I mean, except for if you include the Donkey Kong Congo, I think it what it is, bongo with the bongo
Donkey
drums.
Konga.
Donkey Konga. Yeah. There really hasn't been a new version of Donkey Kong or Donkey Kong Country since the Game Boy
Super
Advance.
Nintendo. Well, there was Donkey Kong 64.
Right. And wasn't that just a replica? Yeah, that was like the last one. It's been so long since there's been a new Donkey Kong Country. And I really look forward to that.
One of the things I've noticed is that Nintendo is starting to pull some of their own old franchises out of the hat. For example, Metroid, they hadn't used that for years, and then they just pulled out, and it's a downright success.
Oh, Metroid. I love Metroid.
Yeah, Metroid. Yes. Well, actually, they also announced during E3, they announced Metroid Prime 3 Corruption for the Wii.
Yes.
And Reggie described it as the most intuitive first-person shooter ever. And it looks really cool, man.
I love the Metroid games. I have played every single one that they put out, except for the one for the DS.
One of the things that's funny about Metroid is that on the NES version of Metroid, I think at the end of one of the Metroid games, Samus takes her suit off, and you can see it's a girl you've been playing with.
Right.
You know, I'm playing with, I don't know. But you can say it's a girl you've been playing as in the game, and I can just imagine some of the teenage boys that played that game back then. I can just imagine their reaction.
And I was, when that first... just be scared. When you first got to the end of that, that was pretty revolutionary in video games at the time, because there really wasn't any female characters back then that you'd actually play through. And it was so revolutionary almost, because you got to the end and video games were primarily considered a male-dominated genre, and here you get to the end of this game, you take your helmet off, and you've been playing as a female the whole time, and it's like, wow, it was really unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah, and you look down and then you realize, okay, sorry.
Did you guys see the Metal Gear, the Super Smash Brothers for the Wii? Did you catch Snake, the Metal Gear clip?
No, I didn't say that.
Did you catch the box reference?
Yeah.
Because if you actually played the first Metal Gear that came out, and I know it was on the Nintendo Entertainment System, that one of the things in that game is you would actually hide inside a cardboard box and move around the screen as a cardboard box. And it was cool that they brought that back for the Super Smash Brothers game coming out. That was really cool, I thought. That was a great homage. I don't know if you do that in any of the future releases of Metal Gear for the... I think one came out on the 64, and I think there was a GameCube version, and there's like Metal Gear, all those that came out for the PlayStation. And I don't know if you actually hide inside a cardboard box and move around in that.
I don't think so. That was
a great blast back to the past.
Yeah. Also, did you see that tennis game they announced called Wii Sports? It's not just tennis. It's baseball and stuff like that.
I saw them playing it.
Yeah, it looked really cool.
Which, when I first saw them playing it, I said to my colleagues, I said, you know what? If I tried to play that in my house, I'd end up whacking my daughter in the head with the
something. Yeah. But actually, it would be a good party game. If you sit in, like, eight people in front of a TV and then play that, that'd be fun.
With drunks.
Yeah, you better have, an auditorium-sized living room to be able to do that.
Well, actually, I remember a few years ago when I was in the kind of junior high school, whatever you could call it, the U.S. equivalent would be, but when I ever went to one of my classmates' birthday parties, I'd always sit in front of the TV playing Nintendo 64 or something, and then my Mario Party would be all the time. That was a really good game.
Yeah, and I think that's what Nintendo's banking on. I mean, I hear a lot of things saying that, there's like all this buzz around the 360 and the PlayStation 3. And what it sounds like is a lot of people are saying, yeah, you're going to either buy a 360 or a PlayStation 3, and you're going to buy a Nintendo. So, those people that are, really into the 360 PlayStation.
Yeah, did you hear that both Peter Moore and Phil Harrison, I think his name is, from Sony, said either you're going to buy... Peter Moore said that... why would you want to buy a PS3 when you can get a Xbox 360 and Nintendo Wii for the same price?
Right. And
just so we don't get hate mail, I think we should just mention a few things about the PS3, maybe. Don't get hate mail.
Did you hear they have the same... they used, the gyroscopes that the Wii used
I heard.
They have a sort of a tilt sensor, motion sensor in the PS3 controller, and so that you can kind of, if you tilt it down, and you, if you're playing a flight game or something, the plane would go downwards.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that would work too well with a two hands on one controller like that.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it just seems like it would be harder to make it as in-depth as something like the Wii.
Yeah, but Nintendo also has all sorts of stuff in the Wii controller. They have angle sensors and accelerometers and stuff like that.
And a speaker.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing, man. This is what I keep hearing time and again, is there's so much excitement around the Wii, and Xbox came, and it didn't make as big a splash, and that I think that Microsoft wanted.
Didn't you mean the PS3?
No, the Xbox 360 didn't make as big a splash as Microsoft had wanted. And
well, I think it did when it came out. It certainly did. There were people sleeping 4 days outside of the store.
Right, and I think that's going to happen with any system that comes out.
Yeah.
But Microsoft underproduced, and now the PlayStation's coming out, and I don't think Sony's going to underproduce, but you know, the price on that thing is astronomical.
Yeah. I watched Sony and Nintendo's press conferences live via GameSpot. They streamed them live, so I was up late watching Sony's press conference, and it was kind of like I think Sony has a history over the last 3 years, I think, of just having a very static press conference. It was not very exciting, in my opinion. It was just like a person come in, says some shit, another person come in, shows a game. The first guy comes in again, says some shit. Another guy comes in, shows the game. I mean, they spent 15 minutes showing a 1080p version of Gran Turismo. How much Gran Turismo can you use? Say, watching 15 minutes, man, too much.
Right.
Yeah, Nintendo has always been good about getting people fired up and excited about their systems.
Yeah.
But I think some of their videos need a little bit more work. Like, they really need to hire that person that made the Nintendo on and get him to do some stuff.
Yeah,
that was an amazing video.
Yeah, I think that some of the videos they showed during E3 could have been a little bit longer, but it's okay.
Yeah, Nintendo. I gotta give it to Nintendo. I mean, they are a game company.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
they do phenomenal innovation, and every Nintendo system that has ever come out, even if I've been skeptical about it, has been nothing but fun. And you know, you have Microsoft, who's not a game, you know, not just a game company. They're they produce their software and app and operating systems. And Sony, who is not just a game company, they've got the video.
They're a rootkit company.
Yeah, they got a rootkit
company.
Yeah, they got the rootkits and the movies and the audio, the CDs and stuff like that, and they're just like. But Nintendo has always been games and entertainment, and
yeah.
I'm confident in the Wii, even though the name really doesn't do it as much as the Revolution for me, but I'm confident that it's going to be a success.
Well, a lot of people wrote a lot of. Imagine the amount of hate mail Nintendo got for that game and that name.
Well, I think it was they wanted to get people talking about it, and
yeah.
Like if you like,
and
I checked,
worked it, and it worked, didn't it?
Oh, it worked. Like you check the Google fight on Nintendo Revolution versus the Nintendo Wii, like a month after they released the name, the Nintendo Wii was almost as far as the Revolution. And that they released that name like a year or two ago, so it's they definitely got people fired up, like talking about it and getting free promotion.
Yeah, but also I think the name sounds. If you're gonna be pathetic and childish and makes all kinds of jokes about the name, you're not buying a console anyway, you know.
Right. They could have called it the Nintendo Pink Pansy, and I would have still bought it.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly, because one of the things I like Nintendo is because they have the games that I enjoy. A lot of people say that Nintendo is only for kids and all that stuff, But one of the things I look at the same time when people say that all the politicians in the U.S. and also in other countries are all up in arms about games like Grand Theft Auto that's super violent and all that stuff. And at the same time, people who like games that are not violent get mocked in school. What the fuck is that shit about?
But, you know, on the flip side, you know, Nintendo does have some adult-orientated games that are really good. Resident Evil 4.
That's not a Nintendo game.
Well, it's a Capcom game, but, you know, that started on the GameCube, and that was I think that turned around the horror genre there. That was a phenomenal game.
Actually, I should say something. I just read on one of my friends runs a big Danish Nintendo site, and I saw a story a few months ago on his site about a game called Sadness coming out of Poland, and the developers say this game is kind of like for adults, but with adults with strong nerves, because this game is going to be like not only violent but kind of very, very scary game too, because I think if I remember correctly, the example the developer gave is that you can walk up to using the nunchuck controller, you can walk up to an enemy, and then using the remote kind of controller, you can, using the same arm movement, you can slice the throat open of an enemy. Scary, right?
So obviously this is coming out for the Wii.
Yeah.
What? Who's developing that?
Yeah, I think the company's called Nibris or something like that. I don't remember for sure.
With the Wii controller, you could have like a serial killer kind of game where you could just use the Wii controller as a knife, and you could like Friday the 13th.
Exactly. Actually, you, in the Red Steel game I mentioned, you're kind of doing that with the, because sometimes you run into a boss guy where you have to use a katana sword to actually use sword fighting against him, and that just looked very cool.
Yeah, but that definitely the Wii is going to be something to check out.
Yeah, but as actually, just so we don't bash Microsoft and Sony too much, they have their goals with the PlayStation 3, but I think with the Xbox 360, I just don't see what's so innovative about those consoles, because it's just an upgrade basically, kind of like upgrading the graphics card.
Yeah, essentially. And, you know, my opinion between the three systems is Sony has always had the lion's share of games.
Yeah.
And there's been a ton of games that really bite on the Sony PlayStation. And the Xbox has had, like, a few, has had very minimal number of games. A few hits. Yeah,
that's actually a lot of Xbox games these days.
But how many of those do you actually want to play?
I don't know. I think the only thing I use my two Xboxes for is Linux and Media Center.
There you go.
I think the Microsoft's is basically Halo got them started, and now, like, if it weren't for Halo, they would probably not be very far. And Sony's saviors are Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And it was one of the series that got them far, I can't remember.
But seriously, how many people is going to pay $600 for a gaming console? You can get a damn good PC for the same money.
Obviously, you're not watching a lot of American reality television on MTV.
I don't have MTV.
I only
have three TV channels, and they're all ass-boring Danish channels.
I don't watch TV anymore.
Yeah, actually, that's the same, because we only have those boring channels.
That's like, why you guys don't know who's going to pay $600 for these.
Well, who is that?
It's the obnoxious rich upper class Americans that'll pay for that crap.
Paris Hilton.
Paris Hilton.
Yeah, and people who do not have the money to be spending on that stuff will spend the money on that, because it's PlayStation, and it's a status symbol. The same people that'll buy the $100 iPod case.
Exactly. Well, it's an Apple product, right?
And hardcore gamers will buy it.
Just to quote Pat here, it's a superior Apple product.
Yes, it's a superior Apple product.
That's a great quote, man.
You know what? That's the problem. It's not a superior Apple product, because that's just
inferior
redundant.
Apple
that's
product.
Redundant. It's just an Apple product, because by connotation, it's superior.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. But I think we're going to close up the recording here. I want to thank you two for coming on. Anything else you want to say?
Nope. I don't think so. Actually, to the listeners, I just wanted to say, even though we sound like Nintendo fanboys, I don't bash Microsoft and Sony for setting their own goals, but I just don't think that I'm not going to spend $600 on a gaming console. That's just all I have to say.
And those opinions, I think, are yours and yours alone, because I will go on record as saying I would purchase a Nintendo before I purchase a PlayStation or an Xbox any day.
What?
I said I would purchase a Nintendo before I would purchase a PlayStation or an Xbox any day.
Yeah, okay. You're going to get a lot of hate mail now, Dan.
Well, bring it on, because you know what? That's my opinion, and you can hold it or whatever, but I firmly stand behind Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Nintendo has made some faults, like Virtual Boy.
Yeah, that was just a disaster. And then the Power Glove for the NES, remember that? That was just a disaster. Oh,
but yeah, they have been in the market for quite a long time, and they've learned.
They have really shot themselves in the foot sometimes. I think they announced once a new version of the Super Nintendo console, like a more compact version of the console, and then 2 weeks later they announced they wouldn't be producing any more games for the Super Nintendo platform. It was just like, but I think one of the things Nintendo has done is they have learned from their mistakes, and also they have a great precedent these days.
But were the Power Glove and the Virtual Boy mistakes, or were they predecessors to what we're having now? What the Wii is going to be.
Now, I think the Wii is not that. The Power Glove, it was just a disaster.
Yeah, but maybe it was way before its time.
Yeah, exactly, I think so.
Well, I think they tried to pull off something that they didn't really have the technology to do, and they couldn't implement it right. And then they released it, which was what they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But hopefully they've learned.
Well, actually, one of the things if you look at Nintendo over the last 4 or 5 years, you'll notice that they have changed dramatically, because the DS is a great example. How big a change is that from the Game Boy? It's a huge change. Because I think it was in 2002, I think. Their old president, whose name I unfortunately can't pronounce, and he stepped down, and Satoru Iwata became the president of Nintendo, and he's just been doing an awesome job. The great thing about Nintendo's president is that he's not some kind of office dickhead. He's actually a major in computer science from the University of Tokyo, I believe it is. Boy, I could be wrong about that. Check Wikipedia on that.
Well, we'll see. Enough Nintendo love.
Yeah.
We gotta close this up.
Yeah, we gotta go read our hate mail though.
Yes, so I wanna thank you guys for coming on. We actually have a really solid Linux episode this week. And we'll see how
better than last episode.
I compliment both Jesse and Kizzle for what they did last week. And they filled in when there wasn't going to be one, so, enjoy it for what it was.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
They actually did have some good points, so good job.
Yes, so thank you guys for coming on today, and we'll see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.
That wraps up another episode of Logger. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Logger is released under Creative Commons for non-commercial use license. Feel free to copy, excerpt from, or distribute Logger for non-commercial purposes. The opening music of the show is provided by James Underberg, called The Battle, with sound effects from Blob Wars by Parallel Realities. We'll see you next time.